And as we move on now, you're seeing more and more automation happening. Is this something that's going to hit, especially given that our unemployment rate isn't exactly going down? You know, and unemployment, especially amongst the youth, you know, that's in the 30s. So should we fear this? Or should we be cautious in adopting technology?
So, you know, all the economists, whenever you meet them, they talk about a demographic dividend and
right.
how our population is going to make us all rich mm-hmm. because we've got so many young people. But to me, I worry that it is a demographic time bomb.
Right.
Today, everybody's got a mobile phone. The aspirations of people over there and here are no different to somebody in London and New York. And therefore, your expectations are much higher. You've
right.
got to deliver something. Mm-hmm. And my concern is this challenge is not unique to Kenya. It's a challenge Africa-wide. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think I've found any African government that is seized of the problem and creating the jobs commensurate with the challenge. I just
right.
don't see it. Then, going back to your point about this new world, AI, automation, mm-hmm. when I look at all of that and I think to myself, you know, the world is changing so fast. Are we going to create jobs in the way we're envisaging, like in that Vision 2030? Because
right.
the economies are totally, it's a gig economy, it's just in time. You know, the days of Volkswagen doing thousands of cars might have gone.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure. It's very difficult to predict what will happen.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do know is the speed of change is so dramatic. And also disruption is off the charts
right.
in comparison to any time since I've been alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can wake up in the morning and something's disrupted.
Right.
Yeah. So I agree with the point
uh-huh.
you're making is,
right.
you know, are we imagining the future? Oh, there's a great quote from Vinod Khosla, who set up Sun Microsystems, who says the future is not in the rearview mirror.
Right.
If you're looking back
yeah.
for the future, you're not going to see it. And I sometimes think this is what we're doing, right?
Right.
We're looking here and thinking,
yeah,
okay,
thinking,
it's
yeah.
more that. And I don't think it's going to be like that. So yes,
mm-hmm.
disruption. You know, there's a great economist called Schumpeter who mm-hmm. talks about creative disruption.
Right.
And I think we're in one of those moments.
Mm-hmm. All right. Kenya has been like a hub or has been portrayed as a hub of innovation, especially digital innovation, Silicon Savannah and all of that. Do you see the sorts of adoptions of technology or uses of technology that would create the sorts of opportunities that you're saying policymakers are not doing?
So that's a really interesting question. I spent a lot of time looking at this, and I must say, 10 years ago, when I went round and, you know, we were just beginning to sip the Kool-Aid of us being an innovation economy, and I met a lot of entrepreneurs, particularly in the tech space, and I felt that all of them were looking to get $50,000 grant from Bill and Melinda Gates, maybe $75,000 if they were lucky
mm-hmm.
from somebody else. That's not the game, right?
Right.
That's not the game. That is an old game.
Mm-hmm.
The real game is to build something that has use, build an Uber, which is going to disrupt the economy and
right.
make you billions of dollars, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we can see that in Alibaba, Jack Ma, we can see that in Facebook. You know, these are the things which are going to generate money.
Mm-hmm.
A grant is not necessarily going to help, although it did help M-Pesa with
right.
a DFID grant
uh-huh.
of $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what I've noticed increasingly now from the entrepreneurs I'm meeting is that they've become more entrepreneurial.
Right.
So I think Silicon Valley was hyped, African Silicon Valley was hyped, but I think now I can say the hype is actually being met by a degree of reality.
Right.
I'm seeing a lot of entrepreneurial, particularly around tech,
mm-hmm.
Individuals are looking not only at the opportunity of 49 million Kenyans, but the opportunity of 2 billion Africans
right.
in 2050.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what excites me when I hear people who understand that's the market they're going for. They're not trying to get a grant off Bill and Melinda Gates. They're
mm-hmm.
trying to build a business that makes a difference in people's lives and for which they will be rewarded handsomely.
All right. Can you talk about the Kenyan economy without talking about corruption?
Yes.
And you've alluded to it throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that you're quite impressed by what the DPP is doing, the Director of Public Prosecutions. Do you think prosecutions are the way to solve our corruption problem? I ask this because what I have not seen is the policy initiatives that would actually close the loopholes.
What would those policy initiatives be?
Well, now that you've turned it on me, I would assume that when you have something like IFMIS,
yes,
you know, that has been shown to be quite leaky, that we'll be looking at fixing that, you know, rather than simply talking about getting people. If we're talking about the chicken gate, we'll be looking at our electoral system and saying, where are the leakages and how do we fix those? These are not the conversations that I hear people talking about. They are always about prosecutions. Mm. And my question to you is, do you think that is enough? Or are you seeing any policy initiatives to shut it off?
So I absolutely agree with you that corruption is a cancer, and it's gotten worse, I think, over time, and it's not sustainable. I mean, when you look at some of these, whether it's at the national level or whether it's at the county level, mm-hmm. and you look at, you know, the wheelbarrow story, I mean, this is not even small corruption. They used to say Asia, there was corruption in Asia, but they still came up because the corruption was fixed. It was like 12% or 10%. You knew what you were going to pay. It never went off into like crazy territory.
Right.
Whereas it seems here that we've gone into a craziness. Mm-hmm. People have been possessed by this opportunity to go and raid the larder, and you know, they're not just taking one chocolate, they want to take 500 chocolates, and they're going to fall sick, but they don't realize it yet. Mm-hmm. So yes, we've got to deal with it. Now, you know, we've got to deal with it at a number of different levels. Mm-hmm. I think the first level we've got to deal with it is a societal point of a level. I remember in 2002, when President Kibaki came into power, there was a time when people were in the street. If a policeman asked you for a bribe, you did a citizen's arrest, mm-hmm. and you took them to the police station. I don't know if you've remembered this. There was a period. So when people tell me we can't change, I say to them, nonsense, we can. There's an example. Mm-hmm. The question is, you have to empower people so that they feel confident that if they did that, somebody would deal with it and manage it for them.
Right.
And so I think that's an important component to this whole thing. Mm-hmm. The second component is also the way government is working and the way government is operating. How do we change that?
Right.
And I think we have to be honest with ourselves and say, let's take the sugar thing. It did not happen by itself.
Right.
It was plotted. Mm-hmm. It was designed for that moment, for people to make that. And we've got to deal with those sorts of things. And this is happening across the board in so many things. And in order to do that, ultimately, you do need a prosecution. You do need someone put behind bars. You do need people to see, okay, he did that, it was wrong, he's in jail now. Mm-hmm. That is the missing link, right? We don't see that. We just see somebody with a brand new car, a lovely new house, a big donation at church, and we're accepting it, right? And at the end of the day, we've got to think that all that spending is at the expense of our people who are eating adulterated sugar, who are not able to survive in a decent manner. Mm-hmm. That's what we've got to start looking at. But it does, of course, start with processes as well. And we've got to work out how we deal with it. Because if we don't, it's going to deal with us.
which it already is doing.
That's right.
Now, looking beyond our borders.
Yes.
The U.S., you've got Donald Trump there,
yes.
Sort of railing up the global economy, sparking off trade wars and stuff. What do you think? I mean, are we at risk? Should we be concerned about what he's doing, especially with China?
Yes.
I know they just had an agreement, apparently, with
EU.
The EU. Mm. You know, so should we be concerned? Is that something we should keep an eye on?
So we need to keep an eye on, because the negative spillover effects can hit us in Africa. Mm-hmm. I mean, other people are more in the line of fire.
Right.
Somewhere like South Africa, which provides a lot of steel for the car industry, is going to take a quick hit very, very hard. And that's why Ramaphosa is so concerned about it. Mm-hmm. if the global economy slows down, the demand for commodities goes down, that hurts Africa, because Africa is still a commodity provider.
Right.
This is one of the issues that we know, we're still providing a lot of raw commodities, so we need to be aware, situationally aware.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also my impression is, you know, I disagree with him in many ways. I think he's a fundamental racist, and
right.
I don't like that. And I think he's changed the way people are talking about race and issues, which I thought we'd moved beyond
mm-hmm.
after Obama, but clearly we haven't. We've gone
right.
back. But at the same time, I think there's some method in his madness.
Mm-hmm.
And the method is this one. I think he's going after China. He realizes that it's now or never, that they've got to deal with China now if they want to maintain their superpower status.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's in the South China Sea or whether it's with trade, the real target amongst all the smokes and mirrors is Xi Jinping
mm-hmm.
and China. And that's why he's pulling Russia closer to him. It's a reverse Henry Kissinger. Kissinger brought China close
right.
to take
uh-huh.
on Russia. This time he's bringing Russia close to put pressure on China.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, if the Chinese economy takes a hit, we are going to be very exposed. Because
right.
whether it's debt, whether it's trade, today China is, I think, Africa's biggest trading partner,
right.
Africa's biggest lender. What will happen if demand falls substantially in China, I think will affect us.
Mm-hmm.
If they catch a cold, if they sneeze, we're going to catch a cold.
Yeah. And that again brings us back to our linkages we've seen since
yeah.
Kenyatta came in. We've really grown close to China, you know. And should we be wary now? Of that? Should we be kind of like widening?
Look, the strategy that I would be using is never to be totally dependent on one counterparty, that
mm-hmm.
we've been quite sophisticated in our ability to navigate multiple stakeholders, whether it's China, the US, Europe. That's been one of our skills.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we've got to make sure that we're not too deep in what with one party.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very, very key, and that's part, that should be part of Monica Juma's mm-hmm. strategy, and I'm sure it is. But yes, I mean, I think Africa has to look very carefully at its relationship with
mm-hmm.
China. For a long time, you know, we thought China was Santa Claus. It's
right,
the way
yeah.
our, particularly our governments and policymakers would look at it. They would look at it as like, this is the most incredible thing. They don't ask any questions and they dump money on us.
Mm-hmm.
Was the takeaway you would get. But that is not the case.
Right.
The Chinese are just as interested in their national interests.
Yes, right.
And they're more effective at following their national than we are, because at times we get sidetracked
right.
into different things.
Okay, we're coming towards the end
yes.
of this. But very quickly, I've got to ask about regional integration.
Yes.
It was one of the things that Kenyatta made a big pillar of his policy when he came in 2013. How are we going, or how are we doing in terms of integrating, especially in the EAC region? There's lots of paper talking about us having a common market, having a customs union, but on the ground, it doesn't really seem to be that. The reality doesn't mirror what's on paper. Where do you think we're going with?
So I'm a big believer in the African Free Trade Agreement and Free Trade Treaty. I think, you know, if we can cut all the barriers, we'll all be doing business all over the continent, and we're just putting blockages in front of ourselves. Within the context of trading blocks, the EAC actually is further ahead than any other one in the amount of trade that's currently happening.
Right.
Obviously, a lot more could happen. And we seem to be at the moment conflicted with one of our biggest trading partners down south,
mm-hmm.
where we've got quite a friction relationship. I think, so overall, it has had seen good progress. There has been, we have advanced, but we seem to find a lot of points of friction. I think we've got to put more energy into this,
mm-hmm.
and we've got to widen it. We've got to bring Ethiopia in. That's 100 million people on our doorstep. Big market, big opportunity. That is, to me, a singular opening for Kenya Inc. to seize.
This has been Ali Kansachu, who we're talking to. He's the CEO of rich.co.ke. Make sure you check out his website.
Thank you.
And this is The Elephant, and we'll see you next time.